All right, let's dive into some pretty amazing stuff in the Bible. Ezekiel's prophecies.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically, chapters 36 and 37.
Yeah.
We've got this lecture transcript from a seminary class, and it really unpacks these chapters.
It does.
What's cool is that it doesn't just give us like one interpretation,
yeah,
right? It dives into all these different scholarly viewpoints.
Yeah.
So it's like we get to hear from all the top experts on Ezekiel.
Exactly.
Buckle up, though, because we're going to encounter visions of dry bones coming back to life.
Mm.
Sticks magically joining together.
Sounds fun.
And promises of like a transformed land and a new heart for God's people.
That's powerful stuff.
Yeah. I mean, these images have puzzled people for centuries.
Yeah. I mean,
so let's dig in and see what they can mean both back then and for us today.
Yeah. What really makes these chapters so intriguing is the backdrop against which they were written.
Right.
Ezekiel was prophesying during a time of just immense upheaval.
Oh, yeah.
Jerusalem had fallen to the Babylonians.
Wow.
And the people were in exile.
That's a national crisis and despair.
Moment of crisis and despair, exactly.
Yeah. It's hard to even imagine what it must have been like to witness the destruction of your homeland and like the scattering of your people.
Right.
And Ezekiel had warned them that this was coming.
Exactly.
So when he starts talking about restoration in chapters 36 and 37, it's like this glimmer of hope in just the darkest of times.
Yeah, it's like a light at the end of a long tunnel.
Yeah.
And that hope is expressed in some truly extraordinary imagery.
Oh, yeah.
But before we get too swept away by the drama of the dry bones and magic sticks,
okay,
we need to set the scene a bit.
Okay.
We need to understand the historical context to really grasp the full weight of these prophecies.
Okay, so paint the picture for us.
All right, so imagine you're one of those exiled Israelites.
Okay.
You've lost everything. Your home, your temple, your sense of security.
Like starting from scratch.
Yeah, and then you hear Ezekiel talking about a new heart and a restored land.
Wow, it's like a lifeline in the midst of a raging storm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Chapter 36 in particular is just packed with these promises of renewal.
Okay.
God speaks of cleansing his people, giving them a heart of flesh instead of a heart of stone, and pouring out his spirit upon them.
The language is so powerful and evocative.
Yeah.
You can almost feel the weight of the transformation being described.
It's tangible.
Yeah. But here's where it gets interesting.
Okay.
The lecture highlights this debate among scholars about how to interpret these verses.
Yeah.
Some see them as fulfilled in the return of the Jewish people from Babylonian captivity.
Right, right. That's a common view.
Yeah.
Especially among those who emphasize a literal interpretation of prophecy.
Okay.
They point to verses like Ezekiel 36.24.
Okay.
Where God says, I will take you from the nations and gather you from all the countries and bring you into your own land.
That seems pretty straightforward.
Seems pretty clear cut, right?
Yeah.
But some scholars argue that there's more to it than just a physical return to the land.
Okay.
They see a deeper spiritual dimension to these promises.
So it's not just about going back to the same old way.
It's about more than just the geography.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about a fundamental change in their relationship with God.
Exactly. And that's where the idea of the new covenant comes into play.
Okay.
This concept, which is also found in Jeremiah 31, speaks of a radical transformation of the heart, a change that goes beyond outward rituals and laws.
So it's really about an inward transformation.
It's an inward transformation.
Yeah.
And some scholars believe this new covenant finds its ultimate fulfillment in the establishment of the Christian church.
Okay.
After all, it's through faith in Jesus that believers experience the most profound spiritual renewal.
That's a really interesting point.
Right.
It's like those promises of a new heart and God's spirit dwelling within his people.
Yes.
They find their truest expression in the lives of those who follow Jesus.
Right. And one scholar who represents this view is Willem Alders.
Okay.
He's a pretty influential commentator, and he sees the return from exile as the primary fulfillment of Ezekiel 36.
Mm.
But even he admits that certain verses point to something more than just a physical return.
Like what? Give us an example.
We'll take verse 14, for instance.
Okay.
It describes a land that no longer devours men, suggesting an era of peace and security unlike anything experienced after the return from exile.
Yeah.
And then there's verse 35, which depicts the land becoming like the Garden of Eden.
Wow.
A picture of radical transformation that goes far beyond mere political or geographical boundaries.
So even within Alder's interpretation, there are these hints of something bigger.
Yes.
Something that transcends the immediate historical context.
Exactly. And that's where other scholars like J. Dwight Pentecost and Charles Taylor step in.
Okay.
They argue that while the return from exile might have been a partial fulfillment, The ultimate fulfillment of Ezekiel 36 points to a future restoration of Israel.
Okay.
A restoration that includes both physical and spiritual dimensions.
So we've got this tension between different interpretations.
Yeah.
Each with its own strengths and weaknesses.
Absolutely.
What makes this even more fascinating is that these different views aren't just about academic debates.
No.
They have real-world implications.
Exactly.
For how we understand God's plan for history,
yeah.
His relationship with his people, and even our own lives.
It affects everything.
Yeah.
And that's something to keep in mind as we delve into the even more dramatic imagery of Ezekiel 37 in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay, I'm already hooked. Before we move on, though, what stands out to you so far about these different interpretations?
Wow.
What questions are swirling in your mind as we prepare to encounter those dry bones and magic sticks?
You know.
Okay, so let's get back to Ezekiel, where things are about to get really interesting. We left off talking about those amazing promises of a new heart and a restored land. But then we kind of hit a fork in the road when it comes to, like, interpretation. You know, is this all about the return from exile, or is there something more going on?
Right. And that's where Ezekiel 37 comes in. It really ramps up the drama with that famous vision of the Valley of Dry Bones.
Oh, yeah. This is where Ezekiel, like, really flexes his prophetic muscles.
He does.
Okay, so paint the picture for us.
Yeah.
What's going on in this vision? I mean, dry bones don't exactly scream hope and restoration, at first glance at least.
Well, picture this. Ezekiel is led by God's spirit into this valley filled with dry bones, like bleached white in the sun.
Oh, wow.
It's a scene of utter desolation, yeah. Representing the hopelessness of the exiled Israelites. Mm. They feel like they're beyond repair, like their national identity has been just shattered beyond recovery.
Yeah, it's like a graveyard of shattered dreams and lost potential.
Exactly.
It's no wonder they feel so discouraged.
Then God asks Ezekiel this pointed question.
Okay.
Son of man, can these bones live?
I think I know how this goes, but...
Any sane person would probably say, no way.
Right.
But Ezekiel, being a prophet, he knows better than to put limits on God's power.
Right.
He simply replies, Sovereign Lord, you alone, no.
I love that response. It's like he's saying, with you, God, anything is possible.
Exactly. And God immediately puts that possibility on display. He commands Ezekiel to prophesy to the bones.
To the bones.
To the bones.
Yeah, wow.
To speak life into those dry, lifeless remains.
Okay.
And as Ezekiel obeys, this incredible transformation begins to unfold.
This is where it gets really cool. It's like a scene straight out of a fantasy movie.
It really is. The bones start to rattle. They come together. Sinews and flesh appear. Skin covers them. But they're still not alive.
Oh, so close yet, so far.
Right. They're stuck in this in-between state.
Yeah, not quite dead, but not fully alive either.
And then comes the final breathtaking act. God tells Ezekiel to prophesy to the breath.
Wow.
To command the wind to breathe life into these reassembled bodies. Yeah. And just like that, they stand up, a vast army, ready for action.
Wow, that is an amazing image. It's like witnessing the impossible becoming possible. You know, death being swallowed up by life. But what does it all mean?
Right.
How does this vision of dry bones coming back to life connect to those promises of restoration we were talking about earlier? Oh,
that's where the interpretive dance-off continues.
Okay, I'm ready.
Remember Alders, who saw Ezekiel 36 as primarily fulfilled in the return from exile?
Yeah, he seemed pretty set on that interpretation.
He applies that same lens to the dry bones vision.
Right.
For elders, this vision symbolizes the nation of Israel coming back to life after their period of exile. Their return to the land, the rebuilding of the temple, the reestablishment of their national identity. All of this represents the bones coming together and being filled with breath.
Okay, so for him, it's a pretty straightforward historical interpretation.
Yeah.
The dry bones equal the nation of Israel being restored to their land.
Exactly. But here's where things get a bit tricky. Remember those scholars who argued that Ezekiel 36 pointed to something more than just a physical return?
Yeah.
Something deeper and more spiritual?
Right, right. So they're saying it's not just about the physical restoration of the nation, but also about a spiritual resurrection.
Precisely. Oh. They point out that the breath that brings the bones to life can also be understood as God's spirit. The same spirit that's promised in Ezekiel 36.
Right.
And for them, this signifies a deeper transformation.
Right.
A spiritual awakening that goes beyond simply returning to a geographical location.
Okay, that makes sense. But how does this connect to those different views about the fulfillment of these prophecies?
Right.
We've got the return from exile view, the church view.
Right.
And the future restoration view. Where do they all fit into this picture?
Well, each of these interpretations approaches the dry bones vision from a slightly different angle.
Okay.
For those who see the return from exile as the primary fulfillment, the vision simply symbolizes the nation of Israel coming back to life after their period of captivity.
Okay, so it's a picture of their physical and national restoration.
Right.
But what about those who focus on the church?
Mm-hmm.
How do they interpret this vision?
For them, the dry bones represent those who are spiritually dead, separated from God.
Mm-hmm.
And the breast that brings the bones to life represents the Holy Spirit,
okay,
who gives new life to those who believe in Jesus Christ.
So in this interpretation, it's not about a physical nation being restored, but about individuals being brought to life through faith in Jesus. It's like a spiritual resurrection.
Exactly. And then there's the future restoration view,
right,
which sees this vision as pointing to a time when God will fully restore Israel,
okay,
both physically and spiritually.
So for them, it's like a two-part fulfillment.
Right.
The return from exile was a partial fulfillment.
Mm.
But there's still a future event where God will completely restore his people.
You got it. And this view often ties into the concept of the messianic kingdom.
Okay.
A future time when the Messiah will rule and reign, bringing peace and justice to the world. They see the dry bones vision as foreshadowing that glorious future when God's people will be fully restored and his kingdom will be established on earth.
It's amazing how one vision can be interpreted in so many different ways.
Right.
It's like a prism refracting light into a spectrum of colors.
I like that.
But what's fascinating is that each of these interpretations speaks to the power of God.
Yeah.
To bring life out of death, to restore what is broken, and to fulfill his promises.
It's a beautiful picture of redemption.
Yeah, but wait, there's more. Ezekiel isn't done with the visual aids. He throws in another prophecy, this time involving two sticks.
Yes, the two sticks. This is where things get even more symbolic, even more layered with meaning, and of course, even more open to interpretation.
Okay, I'm ready for another round of the interpretive dance-off. But first, let's hear about this stick situation. All right, so we've got dry bones bringing back to life thanks to God's breath, and now we're talking about sticks. Two sticks, to be exact. I'm really curious where this is going.
Well, you see, these two sticks represent something much bigger than just pieces of wood.
Okay.
Ezekiel is told to write on one stick for Judah and on the other for Ephraim.
Judah and Ephraim, those names ring a bell.
Mm-hmm.
They represent the two kingdoms that Israel split into way back when, right?
Yeah, Judah representing the southern kingdom.
Okay.
And Ephraim representing the northern kingdom. They had been divided for centuries. Marked by rivalry and conflict, it was a painful division in the heart of God's people.
So basically, Ezekiel is holding up these two sticks, which represent a divided nation, a broken people.
Right.
I can see where the symbolism is going with it.
Exactly. Then God tells Ezekiel to do something pretty remarkable.
Okay. Which
he says, join them together into one stick so that they will become one in your hand.
Okay. That's a powerful image.
Hmm.
Like God is saying, look, I want my people to be united, to be whole again.
And that's the core message of this prophecy.
Hmm.
It's about reunification, healing the brokenness that had plagued Israel for generations.
Right.
But like the dry bones vision, there are different ways to interpret the symbolic act.
All right, hit me with those interpretations. How do those different viewpoints we've been discussing apply to this two-stick situation?
Well, for Illozers, who consistently leans towards a historical fulfillment centered on the return from exile.
Right.
The two sticks simply represent the reunification of the Jewish people after their captivity.
Okay, so for him, it's about the scattered tribes coming back together, physically returning to the land as one people.
Exactly. But for scholars who emphasize a more spiritual or future fulfillment,
yeah,
the two sticks represent something much broader and deeper.
Okay.
They point to the ultimate unity of God's people, a unity that transcends physical boundaries and ethnic divisions.
So it's not just about a specific historical event, but about a greater spiritual reality.
Right. Some connect this prophecy to the church, seeing the two sticks as representing Jew and Gentile being united in Christ.
Hmm.
The dividing wall of hostility is broken down and they become one new humanity.
That's a powerful connection.
Yeah.
It speaks to the reconciling power of the gospel.
Yes.
Bringing together people who are once separated by like religious and cultural barriers.
Absolutely. And then you have those who see this prophecy pointing to a future restoration of Israel.
Okay.
A time when all the tribes, both those who return from exile and those who remain scattered, will be reunited under the Messiah.
Okay. So we've got three main interpretations again. Return from exile, unity in the church, and future restoration of Israel.
Right.
And it seems like each interpretation highlights a different facet of God's desire for unity and wholeness.
That's a great observation. Whether it's the physical reunification of a nation, the spiritual unity of believers in Christ, or the future restoration of God's people under the Messiah, the overarching theme is the same.
What is it?
God desires to heal brokenness and bring his people together.
It's like a symphony with different instruments playing different notes.
Yeah.
But all contributing to the same harmonious melody.
I like that analogy. And as we listen to the symphony of interpretations, it's important to remember that these prophecies aren't just about ancient history.
Right.
They speak to something deep within the human heart,
mm-hmm.
a longing for unity, healing, and wholeness.
So it's not just about decoding ancient riddles. It's about connecting with something timeless and universal.
Exactly. We all experience brokenness in our own lives, in our relationships, in our communities. And these prophecies offer a glimpse of a future where God's healing and unifying power will be fully realized.
It's like a beacon of hope, reminding us that even in the midst of division and conflict, God is working to bring about a future where all things will be made new.
And that hope is not passive. It calls us to be agents of reconciliation and peace in the world around us.
So it's not just about waiting for God to fix everything.
Mm.
It's about partnering with him in the work of healing and restoration.
Exactly. As we reflect on these prophecies, we can ask ourselves,
mm-hmm.
where do I see brokenness in my own life and relationships?
Yeah.
How can I be an instrument of God's peace and unity?
That's a good one.
How can I contribute to the healing of our world?
These are powerful questions that challenge us to move beyond simply studying the Bible to actually living it out in our everyday lives.
And that's what makes this journey through Ezekiel's prophecy so enriching. It's not just about gaining knowledge. It's about being transformed by that knowledge, allowing it to shape our hearts and actions.
Wow, we've covered so much ground in this deep dive. From dry bones and magic sticks, to the return from exile, the church, and the messianic kingdom, it's been a whirlwind of interpretations and insights.
It certainly has. And I hope it's left you with a deeper appreciation for the richness and complexity of these ancient prophecies, as well as their enduring relevance for our lives today.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up this deep dive into Ezekiel's prophecies of restoration, we encourage you to keep pondering these questions. What does healing and unity look like in your own life, in your relationships, in your community? And how can you be a part of God's grand story of restoration, bringing hope and healing to a broken world? Keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.